This recording is by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website, mbeinstitute.org. Mary Baker Eddy is the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science and the System of Divine Metaphysics. She is the author of the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. On page 146 of this textbook, she states the following: Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based and the sacred rule for its present application to the cure of disease. And on page 330, she states this: When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. This prayer treatment is on the topic of soul. The title is Soul versus Sin. There are seven synonymous terms for God, and in accordance with the development as provided in Genesis chapter 1, the qualities of soul are the third one that is listed, and they're called days of creation. The first one is day one, which is mind. The second, day two, is spirit. The third, as mentioned, is soul. The fourth is principle. The fifth is life. The sixth is truth. And the final seventh day of creation is love. At the beginning of the textbook, Mary Baker Eddy gives us three introductory quotes. And the first one draws attention to what we always want to be striving for, and they are the words of Jesus, and they state, Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. The second quote is from Shakespeare, There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And the third one is from Mary Baker Eddy, Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. Going back to the first one, we always want to be striving for truth about whatever topic that we are exploring. And as we find it, which we do in degrees, then we will be replacing ignorance with truth. Einstein states that curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. So that's the attitude we want to have when we're searching for truth. And the second one, about Shakespeare, he gives us a clue about how we can proceed to find truth. And that is, we have to plant the facts about the truth, about the topic that is of interest in the present study, into our thought. And we need to replace anything that is not truth with truth. One of the good ways to start is to have clear in our mind what God is. The Bible states that God is all. That means all existence is an expression of God, a reflection of the qualities of God. The topic to this prayer treatment of soul versus sin is intended to mean that we want to get a better understanding of soul so that we will not be involved in the opposite, which is sin. That's one of the many words that define the opposite of soul. This treatment will include a link to a list of the terms that Mary Baker Eddy uses to define soul and its opposites. To make a quick explanation of the third quote by Mary Baker Eddy, where she says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." God does not have ears. The definition of God on page 465 is that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. So God is the opposite of a body. He is incorporeal. So he doesn't have ears. He is the function of all hearing, but that is only for us to reflect. He doesn't communicate with an individual human. He has already finished his work, as Genesis chapter 1 says in verse 31. And everything that God made is very good. And the evening and the morning were the seventh day. And that's the day of rest. So God has already done his work. God is not a creator. He is a revealer. When we learn something new about God, we are not learning about creation. We're learning about truth. And the Bible says that there is nothing new under the sun. So creation is only a misunderstanding. It's really revelation. It is being revealed to us as we peel back whatever it is that is blocking us from seeing the truth. So what we really are doing is we're replacing a misunderstanding with truth. It's like in mathematics, 4 plus 5 is not 8.9 or 9.1, it is exactly 9. So we replace any number that is different than 9 with the number 9. We don't try to improve a mistake, we replace it with the truth. And when Mary Baker Eddy says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer," I believe what she is saying is that she has aligned herself with the laws of God and therefore benefits with the law of God to which she refers. The benefits are for everyone. Everyone has the ability to reflect any and every quality of God. And as we do that, then we gain the benefit. Mary Baker Eddy states that the good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. Now, the absolute meaning of good is on page 587, and it defines good, that's with a capital G, as a title for God. She defines it as God, Spirit, Omnipotence, Omniscience, Omnipresence, and Omniaction. The quote that was read to you from page 146 about divine science being reduced to a system, think about the system being broken into two basic categories. One is the atmosphere, and the other is the function. Also, think of a matrix, which is merely like a spreadsheet. It includes rows and columns. Construct a spreadsheet or a matrix with 7 columns and 7 rows. And across the first row, insert the terms mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And going down the far left column, insert the same terms. Mind being in the corner, and right below that would be spirit, then soul, principle, life, truth, and love. What is meant by the terms atmosphere and function? Let's think about the terms for God, which are mind and soul. Mind is anything to do with mental activity. Soul is anything to do with the five senses. We commonly call them sight, hearing, feeling, smell, and taste. The Bible tells us that the only substance is spirit. That means the only mental activity we could have that is real must be spiritual mental activity. And the same with soul. Any senses that are real must be comprised of the substance of spirit, and therefore they are spiritual senses. Mary Baker Eddy gives us what the definition of those five spiritual senses are. For sight, it's spiritual discernment. So we can tell the difference between being intelligent, which is a term that defines mind, and being ignorant. And for substance, we can tell the difference of whether or not it is a spiritual substance or a substance of matter. For soul, we can tell whether it is a material sense or a spiritual sense. A material sense are things that are like emotion. They come and go quickly. But a spiritual sense is eternal, lasts forever. And principle, imagine building a sandcastle on the beach. A wave can come along and level it. Therefore, we don't want to have principle based on sand. We want it to be based on something that is lasting. That means it has to be spiritual. And principle represents structure, balance, and harmony. We want those to be permanent, not temporary. Temporary may look beautiful for a moment, but it is of something that is no lasting foundation. How about life? Life is living the qualities of God. Do we want to be focused on life, trying to be focused on matter-based objects? Then they are temporary. I read something recently that said when one goes around the corner, in other words, they're invisible, in common terms, they've passed on, they can take everything with them that they've given away, but they can't take anything that they've taken. Ones that focus on accumulating matter are accumulating things they have taken. But if they receive through enlightenment anything that is spiritual, the only way they can really enjoy it is to share it, reflect it, give it away. And those are permanent. They stay with us forever. We might think of someone that has passed on and something really wonderful that they did, and it benefited one or more people. That can be remembered indefinitely. But a material-based activity that has no lasting value. How about item number 6, which is truth? The opposite of truth is error. So in our spiritual discernment, we need to be able to tell the difference between truth and error. And the same with love. Are we talking about a material-based love or a spiritual-based love? Material-based love comes and goes quickly. Spiritual love means we're really caring about the well-being of someone else. It has nothing to do with a material sensation, but about true caring, true loving, true kindness, true generosity. Everything has to do with spiritual qualities if it is based on the substance of spirit, not matter. If we are truly focusing on soul, that means we are going to identify whatever the topic is, whether it's an individual or an event or maybe a project. If we focus on the spiritual nature, in other words, the real substance, then if it is a true, real, worthwhile project that is going to be lasting, then it is going to be based on something that is going to benefit everyone concerned with the topic. We could find someone homeless, living on the street, and take them on as a project. Find out what the problem is. Why are they living on the street? How did it happen? What is their background of education and experience? Is there some way that you can help them up instead of just giving them a donation? A direct contribution may be needed to some extent, but most people are not going to benefit from the money, but what the money is going to buy. And that's what they think they are missing. So we need to look for what they really need as an object versus a common denominator termed money. Most people that don't have money, it is a result of mismanagement. So giving them money when they haven't had it is not going to improve their skill in managing unless they are taught how to handle it before any money is given to them. And adults really can't be taught. They have to have a desire to learn, and then we can give them the information. Of course, we have to be a good manager of money before we can provide information of value to someone else. Einstein says that a problem can only be solved if it's approached from a different level from where the problem was discovered. So that means that we have to meet them on their level in order to communicate, but we have to think on a different level to find out what the real problem is. And we need to work up to the highest level, which is the absolute level, which is perfection. Let's take a look at the rest of these. We said that sight is spiritual discernment. Number two is hearing. If you haven't looked up the word hearing, you may be surprised to find that it means understanding. Now, since the only substance is spirit, then hearing means, are we really understanding from a spiritual viewpoint? In other words, hearing is really spiritual understanding. In other words, understanding the spiritual nature of whatever it is we are hearing. The third one is feeling, and that represents divine consciousness. Consciousness means our motive and our thought, speech, and action as a result of our motive. In a court of law, if it's an honest one, which are far and few between, unfortunately, then the motive of the accused is going to have to reveal that it was in line with what he's being accused of. If they can't line up the motive with the accused activity, then they cannot legitimately say that he is guilty. So divine consciousness. And of course, obviously, consciousness, since it is truth, means we have to know the difference between truth and error. The fourth one is smell. And that means intuition of character. We might say, something doesn't smell right about this. Maybe they were presented with something. Maybe it is so good that it's too good to be true. If that's the case, and you're honest about the evaluation, then it probably is not true, but it is a trick. And the last one is taste. In other words, if the seeing says yes, the hearing says yes, the feeling says yes, and the smell says yes, then you have to taste it. Put it in your mouth, chew it up, digest it. What is the result? Is it a yes or is it rejected? Some restaurants have a picture of a beautiful plate full of colorful foods and everything looks perfect. And it may pass all of the other tests of the way it looks. You can talk to yourself about it and say, oh, this has this, this, and this. That looks really good. And you might have a good feeling about it. Maybe the restaurant has a good reputation. And you have to smell the food. Does this smell right? And then you take a bite. But you may have a brand new chef. Or perhaps it's a buffet and they had food left over from the day before and it doesn't taste so good. They put it out there because they didn't want to lose the money that it cost to make it. The more senses we utilize, the better will be the conclusion and the decision based on the conclusion. We have to always keep in mind that spirit is the only substance. And our identity, in other words, the soul, the senses are used for identification. So how we identify something has to be based on realizing the only substance is spirit. So we have to identify everything from a spiritual perspective. We have to be looking through the lens of spirit in order to see the truth, in order to be able to separate reality from unreality, truth from error, and so forth, intelligence from ignorance, life from death. Think about life. How are we devoting our effort? Is it on spiritual activities, or is it to try to get rich quick? Are we like a true mother that is going to nurture something to bring it to fulfillment? Or are we trying to get from the beginning to the end and cut out every possible thing that is legitimate in order to get there fast? If we do that, we're probably going to be very disappointed in the results. It may be good for the short term, but are we really looking for the short term? If one is employed, assuming they're working, by a company that is a good company, that is offering whatever they offer, whether it's services or products or whatever, and they are looking to treat the customer correctly, the way they would want to be treated, and they give the opportunity for their staff to benefit from the individual effort and results that come about as a result of the effort, generally one will find that if they stay where they are and nurture everything that can be nurtured, then they will move up the ladder in responsibility and commensurate remuneration, and their benefits, including any retirement that may be offered, or they would have the steady income and they could build their own investment portfolio, that is much better than if they're jumping around here and there trying to get something that may be more enticing for the moment. Of course, this is based on the assumptions that were laid out, that it's a company that is really trying to serve the public. They're offering a product or service that is in need, and that it is fairly priced, and they're very qualified in what they're doing, and they provide a product that meets the needs of the market that they are cultivating for their product and service. These all have to be evaluated. And of course, the best thing to do is evaluate it before you ever go to work for a company. But if you've made a careful selection based on spiritual analysis, then you don't want to be making fast decisions to make changes. You want to stick with it. And if you've got a problem, it's going to follow you wherever you are if you make a fast decision to leave. The best thing is to solve it where you are. And if it unfolds that, yes, you should make a change, then you make a change. That goes with a marriage. If there's a problem in a marriage, just getting a quick divorce is probably not going to be a solution, because the same friction or whatever the conflict was has not been solved. So it's still within your own consciousness, and it's going to follow you wherever you go. Looking at the title, what is referred to when it says soul versus sin? The short answer is this. Think about an archer. And when he shoots the bow, he misses the bullseye. Maybe by a little bit, or maybe he misses the entire target. The mark is the bullseye. If he misses the mark, that is the true translation of the derivation of the word sin. Missing the mark. This prayer treatment has focused on soul, which is how to identify, utilizing the five senses. And the real way to do it is to make sure we realize the only substance is spirit. And therefore, it means to evaluate and utilize the senses based on spirit. Spiritual, seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste. If we miss the mark on any single one, then we are sinning. Here are two things Jesus said. He was asked by one Pharisee, who was a tax collector and very wealthy. He says, "Good master, how may I obtain eternal life?" He had everything money could buy. He wanted something more. He wanted to keep it forever. Jesus, obviously being pure and spiritual in his thought, speech, and action, could sense that this guy was making a god of money, material things, whether it was houses, transportation, you know, in those days it was chariots and horses, maybe had a private army, maybe had 10 wives. They had multiple wives back in those days. Who knows what all he had that he felt was valuable. But he had money to buy anything he could buy. The first thing Jesus addressed was his grammar. He called him Good Master. In other words, the title of good and the title of master. Jesus said, "Why call thou me good? There is only one good, and that is God." You will recall that it was mentioned that there are two primary categories. One is atmosphere, and one is function. he addressed the atmosphere before he addressed the function. And that's what we all should do. On page 115 and 116 of the textbook, Mary Baker Eddy gives us the four levels of consciousness. It is very important to know what level that we are exploring. Otherwise, we will miss the mark on the function. And we may end up with very vivid conflicts where the same thing that Mary Baker Eddy says are opposites in one phrase versus another one, or sentence, or paragraph, or even the topic. So we cannot properly evaluate what any author writes about any topic if we don't understand the atmosphere or the levels. So the atmosphere was addressed. Why call thou me good? There is only one good, and that is God. And again, this is the title of G-O-O-D. Capital G, as Mary Baker Eddy would place it. And she defines good, as already mentioned, on page 587, as God, Spirit, Omnipotence, Omniscience, Omnipresence, and Omniaction. That doesn't leave out much, because God itself, in the definition, is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And also on page 587, that's from page 465, and from page 587 she defines God as the, not just one, but the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. If you haven't looked up the word great, very important to understand what that means. And you will find that there's only one. You're not great. I'm not great. No one is great. God is great. God is the great, the only great. That's what the word great means. It's a very overused word, used very loosely without people understanding what the word great means. It means like the supreme. It's at the top. Nothing else compares. It is the only one, and therefore it is God. Everything about God is omni. Omni means one, only, and all. So if you say God is omni-intelligence, that means there is only one. Only one, and it is all. All intelligence is from God. Everything about God is one, only, and all. Could Jesus be God? Well, he says right there that he's not God. There are several places in the Bible where he makes it clear that he is not God. Do you really think that if you lived in the time of Jesus that you could touch God? You think God is visible? You think God is tangible? Do you think God is made up of arms and legs and all of the different parts of the body that Jesus was? I don't think so. Do you think somebody could cut the side of God open like they did Jesus? Do you think they would have nail prints on their hand? Do you think they could be nailed to a cross? That's a total misunderstanding of who Jesus was and what his purpose was in being here. We cover this very extensively in our prayer treatments. So then, after Jesus made it clear on the title being incorrect, he then answered the question, what do you think one of the common problems is of someone that is very wealthy? I'm not saying this is true about any particular individual, but because they are very wealthy, typically money is a God. And what does the first commandment say? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. So Jesus knew that was a problem with this individual, that he had everything money could buy and he wanted something more. He wanted it to last forever. Jesus told him, step number one, sell everything that you have and give it to the poor. Step number two, then come and follow me. In other words, don't be concerned about where you're going to sleep for the night. Don't be concerned about what you eat, what clothes you wear. Serve humanity. Jesus washed his disciples' feet to show his humility that he wanted to serve humanity. When Jesus was invited to have a meal with a well-known Pharisee called Simon, Mary Magdalene came in there, and she was prepared to do what had not been done, to wash Jesus' feet, dry them with hairs of her head, and then put special ointment on his feet. Back in those days, open sandals and dusty roads, that was the common way to travel. So if you were going to be a guest in a home, the first thing they would do is arrange for your feet to be washed. You have a better feeling if you're clean. Mary Magdalene did it. The Pharisee did not. Jesus did it to his disciples. They didn't do it to his. The fact that he only had a half a dozen people at his crucifixion and none at his trial tells us something very important. He preached to 4,000 men one time, 5,000 at another, and in those days they didn't count women and children. So if you think about it, each one probably had a wife, maybe at least one, and children, probably three or four. He was probably dealing with 20 or 25,000 or 30,000 people at each of those two events. He probably was talking to a total of 50 or 60,000 people, maybe more. And how many showed up at his trial? None. None. And only a half a dozen showed up at his crucifixion, and that was his mother, Mary Magdalene, because she was so totally healed that she had converted, transformed herself to being a spiritual reflection of God. And Jesus recognized that. Martha wasn't there, which is Mary's sister, you know, and there were two or three others. John was the only disciple. Out of 12. Did Jesus make any mistakes? He made 11 in choosing his disciples. Does God make any mistakes? God is omni-intelligence. How could God make a mistake? God is omni-action. How could God create a war, create a storm, create lightning, create earthquake? Fire, any kind of destruction, how could that come from God? God is love. True spiritual love doesn't cause innocent people to be destroyed. In fact, love doesn't cause destruction of anything. If one is evil, they're outside the realm of reality. They're outside of the arms of love. They're outside of the comfort and protection of God's laws by their own choosing. God didn't put them out. They put themselves out. When we break a law of God, God's not involved. We're breaking ourselves against the law of God. We break ourselves. We have one to blame. The one we see in the mirror. Well, we know the Pharisee didn't like Jesus' answer. The answer of Jesus just didn't cut through the mesmerism of the Pharisee that wanted eternal life. Because not only did he have to give up everything he had, but he had to continue a life which was going to be like Jesus, which was humility, being humble. He couldn't give up his ego. He couldn't give up what he thought was the most important thing, and that was material possessions. The other thing that Jesus gave us a clear message on was when a Pharisee asked him, "What is the greatest commandment of all?" If you've read the Bible, you probably have it memorized. He said, "Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself." The Pharisee asked for the greatest. And the greatest is in two parts, which is really unified as one. The topic of visible versus invisible was touched on previously in this recording. So, Jesus makes it clear right here. He doesn't say, touch the Lord, give him a hug, give him a kiss. He says, love. And since spirit is the only substance, we have to love God in a spiritual way, not in an emotional way. Not in an impulsive way, and certainly not in a materialistic way, which is the opposite of spirit. And what does the Bible say about visible versus invisible? It says you cannot love the invisible unless you love the visible first. Not at the same time, first. The golden rule. That's what Christian Science is all about. That's what the system of divine metaphysics is all about. That's what the Bible is all about. There's a movie called Joshua. Very interesting. Has some very good messages in it. And it's named after the character of Joshua. In the Bible, it has suggested you watch the movie. It has some things in there that are not accurate, but it has some good messages in there. And Joshua refers to the Bible as the book of love. Mathematics has 9 digits, 1 to 9, plus 0, for a total of 10 digits. There are 4 operators: add, subtract, multiply, and divide. And there are various levels of mathematics, but the basic ones are what was just mentioned. So you have to know the level, you have to know how the functions work, which are the operators, and you have to have the elements, which are the digits, to work with. And then when you apply an algorithm, you put it all together to come up with a conclusion. The system of divine metaphysics is exactly the same way. Mary Baker Eddy states clearly that the science of Christianity is the most advanced science there is. Einstein supports that. He says that science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. Do you know of any religion that is based on science? A single one? There's one. And that is Christian Science. Do you know of a simple science, a real science that is based on religion? Christian Science. It is based on the science of Christianity. And the science of Christianity is based on the religion of Christianity. Jesus' healings were based on the science. And Mary Baker Eddy is the one individual anointed messenger by God that's announced in the Bible, prophesied in the Bible, by Jesus as well. He said he will send a comforter. That's divine science. The system of divine metaphysics. Christian Science. That's the comforter that is referred to by Jesus. There's not another religion in the world that is based on the science of Jesus' healings. The science of the healings of Jesus solves every mystery that makes people think that his healings were miracles. A miracle is the absence of understanding. There are no such thing as true miracles. The wealthiest man in the world that owns SpaceX, or he controls it. I don't know that he's the sole owner. It's probably a public company. He shot off a rocket and landed it, brought it back and landed it in the launching pad that it came from. Anyone that doesn't understand might think it's a miracle. It's not a miracle to him. Him and the team that he hired, or had other people hire, in other words, the company that he built, they understand that was done because they did it. It wasn't a luck. It wasn't a bit of luck. It was a science of physics and how everything fits together. And it was a higher level than just add, subtract, multiply, and divide. But it was using that as the basic foundation. Raising someone from the dead is a higher level than fixing a finger that you cut. But it's the same principle. It's the same science. On the website, on the home page, one of the featured authors is Dr. Fluno. Like Frank, L-U-N-O. He wrote an article entitled Criticism. He was recruited by Mary Baker Eddy and appointed by her to be on the board of lectureship, 1898. He lectured all around, and that was one of his primary topics. It was so important that Mary Baker Eddy devoted every hour of the day, whatever time she felt was needed, to make sure that she was not criticizing anyone or any event about anything. She, like Jesus, was attacked by everyone. Einstein didn't have a lot of friends. No one that has an advanced level of accomplishments has much in the way of friends, human friends. Their friends are the truth. Jealousy, ego, greed, getting something for nothing. at the top of the list of people that are predominantly criticizers. Criticism stems from being insufficient within themselves. Someone that is easy to condemn others, they see great flaws in themselves. They're blind to it, but that's the underlying problem. So it's easy to tell how to solve it. You nurture the things you're deficient in. We have a section on our home page that says effective healing. We tell you from A to Z how to do it. Heal anything. There's a procedure. It was read to you at the very beginning of this prayer treatment, where Mary Baker Eddy says on page 146 that divine metaphysics has been reduced to a system. And then she says on page 330 that if you understand and practice what is in the 32 planks of the platform that we should be standing on as our foundation to address any problem that comes up, then the infallibility of the system of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. That means the healing will come forth. And the system that's noted on page 146 includes the platform, because we have to have a foundation, we have to have a standard, we have to have a model. We are all, unfortunately, in possession of a closet full of mistakes. If we didn't have a closet full of mistakes, we wouldn't be in visible form, which is to work them out, to solve them. Sylvester Stallone, in a number of his movies, was a symbol of a fighter. He went through a lot of problems and challenges. He got knocked down to the lowest level of life, but he got back up. It's not whether or not we got knocked down, it's what we do about it. In his own words, from his own heart, not from a movie, not as an actor, but the way he really thinks, and it's on our website. In fact, it's on the home page right now. He said the biggest enemy we will ever have is life. Biggest obstacle. He said it will knock you down to your knees. And what we do about it determines our future. The President of the United States has been preaching publicly as the president since 2015 or 6 as he was campaigning. Never give up. Never quit. Never give in. He's a billionaire, but he didn't get it by inheritance. He didn't get it by quitting or giving up. One of his larger investments was in big trouble. He solved it. He wrote a book called The Art of the Deal. And he said if he would have focused on the amount of money he was going to make on the deal, he was sure it would be a failure. What kind of negotiator is the best negotiator in the world? It's the one that knows what everyone needs to have for their own satisfaction and find a way for them to get what they need. Not what me needs to have, what the other people need to have. And if you've got a valid deal, you're going to benefit. if you're thinking about yourself, he's saying you will fail. That's what the golden rule is all about. The very first step, if you look on the website about effective healing, is your attitude and how you live your life. You can't get anywhere in spiritual progress until you face who you are right now. Mary Beck Reddy had one of her students that came to her to get advice on a problem that he wasn't solving. And the first thing she asked him, she said, when you're walking around other people, you know, down the street, for example, and this was back in, you know, probably the late 1800s, so there were no skyscrapers, at least not in this country, in America. She says, what do you think? What do you do when you're walking around other people in public? He didn't have any idea what she was referring to. He didn't have an answer. He couldn't say anything. He was speechless. And she said, are you a Christian Scientist? Well, he had class instruction by her and was taught. He should have learned it. You don't teach adults, they have to learn. But he should have learned what you're supposed to do. And that was a wake-up call. He realized that he wasn't doing anything. He was thinking about himself. He was thinking about whatever, wherever he was walking to and the next thing that he was going to do in his list of things to do for the day. He was not thinking about other people whatsoever. What should we do when we're in public? The same thing we should do that when we're in private. We should be focusing on qualities. I had a very excellent practitioner friend for many years. She's going around the corner now. But she said, qualities, qualities. Everything is qualities. I visited her and her husband one time, and they were watching the Olympics when I came to the door and we were supposed to be meeting. And she invited me to watch them for a few minutes, which I did. And gymnastics was on. And there was a girl there that was, I don't recall offhand whether she got the gold medal. In fact, they probably didn't even mention it at the time because it was before everybody had performed. But she said, look at the grace that that gal is illustrating. She was looking for the symbol and the quality. The girl was the symbol, and the quality was grace. That's a natural thing to be looking for if you're looking at gymnastics. Agility, although agility may not be, that's not really a spiritual quality. Because agility means you're moving, you're changing, and there's no change in truth. But anyway, she said grace. She automatically focused on a spiritual quality. And she told me qualities, qualities, qualities. Everything is qualities. Everything. In other words, the unit of one, our entire being should be based on expressing the qualities of God. So if we see somebody that is obviously in need, maybe a beggar that is on the street, sitting on the sidewalk with his hand out or a cup or something to indicate that he's open to receiving money. What do? Do we flip him a coin or stuff some currency in his cup or hand it to him and then walk away? Do we think our responsibility is over by taking the easy way out? I know of an instance where an individual walked out of a department store And he approached somebody that was just ready to get, you know, right there at his vehicle. And he said, "Could I have some money?" And the fellow looked at him. He looked fine. He looked like he was ready to go to work. He didn't look like he was living on the street. He didn't look dirty. He wasn't in wrinkled clothes or any of that kind of thing. He wasn't without shoes. He said, "Well, what seemed to be the problem?" He said, "I lost my job and I haven't eaten in 2 days. And I need enough to buy some food." What do you think the guy did that was approached to give him money? Did he just give him some money and go on? Would that have solved the problem? He was without a job. He was able-bodied. He asked him what he did for a living. "What is your profession?" He said, "I'm a handyman." And it so happens the fellow had been accumulating a list of things that he needed to have fixed at his home. He ended up taking him, he didn't have any money for gas for his own vehicle. They ended up going over to where he lived, got the vehicle, took it to the gas station, put gas in it, and they went up to his house. He went over the list with him. The guy said he could do everything on the list. He hired him, worked for him for 3 months. And the very next day after he was done with the list, he already had a job lined up that he'd lined up a couple of days before. That's what Mary Becoretti's talking about. She's talking about solving the problem. You know, that included intelligence. It was a mental activity, right? It included substance. He didn't give him money. He went and bought gas and put the gas in his vehicle. If he gave him the money, who knows, the guy could have spent it on drugs or cigarettes or anything, liquor. He wanted to find out the problem, and he wanted to help solve the problem. If we see an accident, what do? "Oh, that's too bad." These newscasters, the first thing they do is they say, "How do you feel about it?" You know, maybe they've injured themselves, or maybe they've lost a dear one in the accident. "How do you feel about it?" You know, they're playing on emotion instead of trying to solve the problem. Somebody in a wheelchair. Have you ever talked to them? I know another circumstance where a fella came out of a store. In fact, it was one of the most common ones. It was the biggest one in on planet Earth. A chain. You all know the name. And there was a young lady in a wheelchair with her mother was there. And she had no control over any part of her body. She couldn't see. She couldn't, you know, it was really a pathetic situation. He went up to them. He found they didn't speak the same language. It was so pathetic, he gave them a generous donation. And he didn't know what else to do. So he tried to say something they could understand. And then he walked away. He immediately started to think about, how can I approach this person? We don't speak the same language. He was a lifelong Christian Scientist. It came to him to print out the preface and chapter 1, which is titled Prayer, and chapter 18, which is entitled Fruitage, which is testimonies from 85 people on 486 healings. I believe it is, from those 85 people that were all verified, had been published in the Christian Science Sentinel and Journal, the weekly and monthly periodicals, over a period of years. In fact, they started the journal in 1883, so that would be, you know, 140 years. So he had that printed out in their language, put it in a three-ring binder, hole-punched it with dividers by the chapters so they could easily get to the chapter and flip the pages, make any notes they wanted to make. And he thought that would be better than giving him a tape. So he gave it to her along with another donation the next time he went back to the store. And he did it, I don't know, 3 or 4 days later purposely to give her the opportunity to have the, you know, have the textbook pages. And she didn't know what to think about somebody giving her a book. She, you know, he made sure that she could read it and the print size and everything was comfortable. And she said, yes, no problem. They got that communication conveyed back and forth. So he went back a week later. She had a huge smile on her face. And he made it clear that she should be reading it out loud to her daughter. He confirmed if she could hear, and she said, yes, she can hear. But she couldn't focus to read. So she's reading Science and Health to her. And over the next few weeks, he took back chapter at a time. And now she has the whole book. Whenever he comes, she jumps out of her chair. She's sitting there next to her daughter. And walks toward him. And gives him an immediate hug. A genuine hug of love. And appreciation. And affection. Spiritual affection. She is seeing a glimmer of hope. Obviously, she doesn't understand the whole textbook. Probably no one that you or I know understands the whole textbook. Or they would be ascended, walking on water, preparing to ascend. We should do the same thing with an accident. If we know that God is all action, we know that an accident can only be a misunderstanding of what is trying to be presented. When one of Mary Becquerel's students sent her a letter about she had a vision problem, she replied back, in fact, I think I already told you earlier in this recording, she replied back, can you focus no matter what comes your way? And that's what the platform is all about. It is our foundation. We need to be building a perfect model that we can refer to continuously when anything that comes within our vision or our hearing or anything else, you know, all five senses, so that we can immediately address the problem and state the facts about God. Not the facts about an accident. An accident has no facts. An accident is theory. It is a misrepresentation of truth. If everyone that saw that accident had that kind of thinking, they would heal the accident. They would heal anything that went wrong, any injury, anything at all. It would be solved instantaneously if everyone that observed it, including the news people, instead of asking them how they feel, reminding them, do you realize that God is the only power? God is the only action? Frederick L. Rawson is one of the greatest geniuses of Christian Science, next to Mary Baker Eddy. Wentworth Winslow is another one. Joel Goldsmith, another one. They all had 15-minute appointments, and by the end of 15 minutes, their patient was healed. Obviously, Christ Jesus healed instantaneously. Mary Baker Eddy did. So there's five people that we know of. They should be our models. Frederick L. Rawson figured out how to heal back in time. He overcame the belief of time. He wrote a book entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And there's a chapter in there called Applied Treatment. And he tells you how to heal 1,315 different ailments. That's included in How to Heal Effectively on our homepage. He's one of our featured authors, along with these other ones that were mentioned, and Dr. Fluno about the topic of criticism. If you want to learn how to be independent instead of relying on someone else that you have no control on the results, there's only one way to do it. And that's to cultivate your own character, or rather bring forth its true nature. Cultivate your consciousness, which, of course, your true nature is your consciousness being projected outward. And whatever you see, hear, whatever you feel, whatever you smell, whatever you taste, think of it in spiritual terms. You can go to the menu, top left corner of every page, and go to topics and click on 5 spiritual senses. And it's, I think, like page 222, and then it goes to like page 227. So you've got about 6 pages there. We need to live our life with the overall attitude of giving. And we can't even begin unless we have an attitude of giving. If you want to find out how someone accomplishes something, then you have to find out about them. Their spiritual qualities. And the 5 that I gave you, 6 that were mentioned, Jesus, Mary Baker Eddy, Frederick L. Rawson, Wentworth Winslow, Joel Goldsmith, Dr. Fluno. Find out how they lived their life. Oh, another one is great, is Bliss Knapp. He was under Mary Baker Eddy's tutelage from the age of around 7 years old. His father, Ira Knapp, that's Bliss Knapp's father, Mary Baker Eddy had on her board of lectureship, and she didn't want to lose him, so she took his son, who lost his mother, under her wing. Up through, I think it was around 20 or 25 years. So until he was like 30 years old. 30 or 35 years old. He was the, I believe he was the youngest, one of the youngest practitioners, one of the youngest teachers, and one of the youngest, if not the youngest, president of the Mother Church. He stood out as a star because of his background, being under the tutelage of Mary Baker Eddy herself from the time of 7 or 8 years old. So imagine what benefit that would have. He did not focus on earning money at all, but he was led to be involved in investments at a very young age, and he made the investment and sat on them for his whole life. And as his, when he went around the corner, he arranged for it to go to the Mother Church, and in today's dollars, it was worth, I think, $2.6 billion. It's all on his index page under his bio. He didn't do anything other than be a good Christian Scientist. He did not manage his investments. He was led to make the investments and be involved in them, and he left them, I think it was raw land. I think it was in California, and he was in Boston. So from the years of, you know, whenever he got started, about 1880 or 90 or something like that, until he left 50 or 75 years later, big boom. He benefited. The money didn't mean anything to him. He did not live an opulent life. He didn't spend extravagantly. He was focused strictly on what he had learned and was continuing to learn from Mary Baker Eddy. If we learn the way they lived their lives, how about Jesus? Was he a taker? None of these people were takers. They were all givers. They lived a life of giving. Mary Baker Eddy went on an appointment with her number one staff, Laura Sargent, to visit a furniture place that made custom chairs. So they had an appointment with the owner. And they went over there to discuss it, the two of them. And when the appointment was over, Laura asked Mrs. Eddy, she says, "You didn't seem to pay attention at all about the conversation, and you didn't say anything about your preference on chairs or anything else." Mary Baker Eddy said, "Did you happen to notice the problem that that gentleman had? He obviously had some kind of a visible defect." He said, "I was treating that, and he was healed." It's like when she asked the student about walking down the street, and you see someone in need, what do? You don't focus on what you are doing there. You focus on how you can help them live a life of giving. That's exactly what Mary Baker Eddy automatically did. Her focus shifted from taking care of some routine thing in the home to taking care of the need that was confronting her. During a 4th of July celebration, other people had arranged to set it up to have it in her lawn, and she agreed to do it. And after it was all over, you know, I guess it was during it, you know, she had such a spiritual sense, she could sense the thoughts of everyone else. And there were 2,000 people that came. And it was a, you know, summer day, so they were all outside. She had a beautiful lawn and everything. And she tells Laura, she says, "You know, I look out here on all these people, and I don't see a single Christian Scientist." She could sense their spiritual atmosphere. Not a single one did she see them as a giver. In other words, they weren't using Christ Jesus or Mary Baker Eddy as a model. And this was before the other three people came around. This was before their time. This was somewhere before 1905 or 6, because that's when she moved into Boston, back to Boston. I don't see a single Christian Scientist out there. And they came to, many of them formed a long line and came so that they could see her personally, just to say hello and shake her hand and whatever they were going to say to her. And there was at least one that had a visible problem, and she healed them on the spot. She gave us the formula. We are giving it to you in expanded form, showing you how you can use all five senses. She didn't have some of the tools that we have available. Recording is extremely important in your own voice and listening to what you record. We give you all the details on the homepage. Mary Baker Eddy gave her most advanced class, which was in 1898 in the Metaphysical College, and they all earned a CSD degree when they finished the course. she was the only one authorized to provide that designation. On the third day of the class, she selected every single one for that class. She knew them individually for their accomplishments in healing, and she wanted to give them the final enlightenment for going out into the world. They were already practitioners, but this was the final. And on the third day, she gave them an assignment at the end of the day to go and perform a healing and come back and report on it the next day to the class. Every single one in the class accomplished it. That's how advanced the class was. So basically, it was an instantaneous healing for all of them. In that class, she gave them 7 prayers, which she called Diapason of Heaven. And Diapason, if you look it up in the 1828 Noah Webster Dictionary, which is the one we highly recommend as your number one source, it says Diapason is compound concord. That's what principle is. Principle is balance and harmony. She lived in a town called Concord, New Hampshire. A concordance, as you know, is finding what you need in a particular reference. The words all have meaning that are very important. The system of divine metaphysics proves that Genesis chapter 1, the Ten Commandments, the Beatitudes, and the Lord's Prayer all are in alignment with the synonymous terms to describe God. So there's a 5-part matrix where they all line up. 5 across the top and 7 rows. They all line up. We have it on our website. Just look under the word compare. I think it's also under Mary Baker Eddy and under topics and probably under system. Before the prayer, the Diapason of Heaven with a focus on soul is recited, and she had 7 prayers, 1 for each of the 7 synonymous terms. We're going to do soul because soul is the one that is in the topic. And just to be clear, soul versus sin, soul is one of the terms for God, and sin is the opposite of soul. And think about the commandment, 2 parts, that Jesus replied when the Pharisee asked him what's the greatest commandment of all. So sin is violating thinking about, talking about, or doing anything. And Jesus said thinking is the same as doing it. So thinking, talking, or doing anything that is in conflict with perfect God in perfect heaven with perfect manifestation symbolized by man, spiritual man, is a sin. Thinking, talking, or being sick, diseased, discordant in any way, and obviously including death, believing in death, believing in sickness or disease, or any form of sin of any kind whatsoever, it's all sin. It's an umbrella that covers everything that is unlike God. not just something that is moral or absent of morals. Everything that is unlike God, everything that's unlike perfect God, perfect heaven, which is our existence, it's our consciousness, and perfect man, which is you and me. And we don't look upon man as being mortal, but as immortal. Check out those pages 115 to 116, the four levels. And it shows the three levels of mortal man, and then the other one is of immortal. When Jesus saw somebody that was having a problem, he didn't look upon them as a mortal man. Otherwise, like Einstein says, you could never heal the problem. You can't fix a problem if you approach it from the same level of where it's discovered. So you have to go down to the root, if you're not already there, which is depravity, and then you have to work up from there to the absolute perfection. So you start with fortifying your thought with what God is, what perfection is, what spirit is versus matter, and all of those things that we've discussed in this prayer treatment. And then you go down to the level of where the problem is. It could be in the middle. If you're sure you know where the bottom is, where the root is, then you don't have to go any lower. But generally speaking, because evil works in deceptive ways, by decoys and deceit, and disparaging one's character, then we may very likely have to go down to the depravity level. We might have to go to the level where someone is born and realize that the only birth is a revealing of a reflection of God, and not coming out of a woman's womb and having pain for everyone involved, or being born with the stigma of being a sinner. That's a belief a lot of churches promote. Jesus' disciples asked him about the blind man from birth. Who did sin, this man or his parents? Jesus said neither. The only reason this is coming across our path is to glorify God. And the way we do that is by healing, by living a life as one of his disciples, one of his followers, following the way that he lived his life, purity, thinking spiritually about everyone. And Mary Baker Eddy, reminding herself every hour to make sure that we do not think ill of anyone whatsoever. Jesus, the disciples of Jesus asked him how many times they should forgive somebody. Seven times? And he said 70 times seven. Which means that don't condemn them in the beginning. You don't have to think about forgiving if you didn't condemn them. Condemn them means you judged them. Instead of sticking along the lines of perfect man, you were seeing them as a sinner. We have to flip it. We have to use it as a reminder to get our thought in order, just like Jesus did. He never thought of anyone as being a sinning mortal man. He thought of them as being an idea of God, and that's why he was able to heal them. And the same with Frederick L. Rosson and Wentworth Winslow, and Joel Goldsmith. They couldn't think of an individual as being a sinning mortal and heal them. Here is the diapason of heaven with a focus on soul, and if any other thought occurs that would not take more than a minute or so to say it, that will follow after I say amen for the prayer and then we will indicate the date and time for future reference. And then I will say the end, and that really means the end. I know you're probably tired of listening by now, and that's the beauty of a recording. You can turn it off anytime. If there's anything that's not of value, you turn it off at the beginning. You have to be in the right frame of thought, be dissatisfied with the life as you see it, and you have hope that there's something better before you can pursue any line of change. Here it is. Diapason of Heaven with a focus on soul. We must hold soul in consciousness only as a sacred name for God. We have to rise above the belief that soul is an invisible personality residing in a fleshly form with a personal identity. Soul must be recognized as a name for God, and a name by which God is to be worshipped. We have to take the interpretation of soul as a personality out of subjective thought and replace it with the true sense. We should declare often, there is only one soul, and that is my infinite, incorporeal, supreme God. Soul is my God, and my God is soul. Amen. I do have one thought that I did not mention in the treatment, and that is that we have a contact page, and if there's anything that you do not understand or any questions you have about the website, the Institute, the Bible, any of Mary Baker Eddy's writings, or the writings of any of the five people mentioned, Mary Baker Eddy being one, Christ Jesus, Wentworth Winslow, Joel Goldsmith, Frederick L. Rawson, oh yes, and Dr. Fluno. Any question about any of those people or their writings and what was already mentioned, please use the contact form, and we do not do any long-winded emails, but we have a very efficient way to communicate, and that includes telephone direct calls. So just let us know, and we're here to serve you, to serve all mankind in any way we can do it. Thank you for listening to this prayer treatment on the topic of soul versus sin. The end.